Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. We'll be talking about the year ahead, what's going to be happening to prices, to rents, and to demand for property. In this episode, we'll be talking about the market in 2022. There are so many questions to answer. Will house prices continue to rise? Will the flight to the country still be the main trend? Or will London and the other cities continue to revive as the bright lights draw buyers back? If so, where will the new urban hotspots be? Some predict an upward trend in interest rates could stifle demand. Or has the pandemic permanently raised the appeal of property as a refuge and as an investment? We'll be looking at what parts of central London will have the most appeal to international buyers. We'll also be taking a look at where rents are headed in the city and in the country. I'm joined as usual by Dominic Agais, CEO of Winkworth, and also by Henry Singh from Winkworth South Kensington. Guys, great to be with you. First to Dominic, what do you think the new year holds for the market?
So, always an interesting one. I think what we're seeing is the easing of the pandemic effect slightly. So, perhaps a slightly more traditional outlook for the year ahead. We've seen the sort of massive trend of the move to the country, driven by people looking for space and being able to work from home full time. And I think we're seeing an element of reversion in that trend. So, looking ahead, I'd say, you know, some of the steam to come off out of the property market in the country, where, you know, we've seen there will be held up those prices because of complete lack of supply. But I think the demand will ease somewhat. And we'll see, you know, a return to London, as we've seen in the lettings applicants registering across our network. Particularly in London, the area that's been a bit unloved is prime central London. So, you know, it's been most affected normally in a moment, a sort of 2008 moment or a large recession. Then central London leads the way out of those recession as investment comes into the city. This time that didn't happen. Obviously, it was led by the country due to the specifics of a pandemic, obviously. So central London really hasn't gone anywhere, and it hasn't gone anywhere for about 6 years. So what we would expect and what we're seeing now is a significant pickup in that activity. And we've seen some quite interesting numbers come through already. I mean, in the last, we measured demand by the number of applicants per property and the movement of that demand over a number of years. So we look at the demand in the last quarter, last 3 months, and we compare that to the same quarter in 2019. And we look at the three sort of individual markets as we see them, which is, you know, central London is a market to itself, the sort of suburban London and the country markets outside of that. We've seen central London have moved 44% in terms of increased number of applicants per property. So that compares to country, which is moving at 36% in terms of increased applicants per property, and with suburban London around 4%. So from that, really, you can see the direction of travel. It shows the buzz around the properties in central London. And I think that will lead to price increases in central London outperforming the rest of the UK.
So that's interesting. So people are coming back to town for the restaurants, for the cinema, for the theatre. In this new, more optimistic climate in central London, do you see some new hotspots emerging, perhaps?
I mean, Henry will talk us through the hotspots of the Royal Borough of Kent and Chelsea. I think that's always been, you know, the old-fashioned traditional markets will be the hotspots. You know, these are the prime areas in central London that have the greatest appeal. And they have that appeal because of their history, really, and how they've evolved over, you know, hundreds of years, what they provide, the architecture and the garden squares. And so there will obviously be variances, but I would say that that sort of Kensington-Chelsea area will lead the way.
We're seeing a rising trend in interest rates at the moment. Could higher rates dampen demand? Will affordability become even more of an issue?
So I think it's, I think there's a lot of debate on discussion on this, and I think it's very different to previous cycles and markets. You know, we're at incredibly low rates, and you know, they incremental rising interest rates aren't going to hit affordability hugely. Clearly, there is a direction of travel that, you know, will affect sentiment, and people don't like to pay more for their mortgage than they were before. But, you know, we're talking about mortgage rates at 1.2%. There is a very long way to go before that comes back to historic norms. So, and I think the what we're seeing is that everyone's very aware of that. Obviously, you know, the Bank of England are very aware of the UK's commitment to property and our wealth being held up in that property, and won't want to upset the apple cart. So they're sort of flagging the increase in, and moving the interest rates up, but at the same time still putting money into the economy. So I don't foresee it being a huge stumbling block. I think it will allow the property market some of the activity to come off and some of the steam, which is no bad thing, and a more sort of steady state above inflation trajectory for property prices over the next few years.
You've talked about London and that this could be its year, particularly for the prime central neighbourhoods. Can you tell me more about what you think is going to be happening there and whether any suburbs are going to come forward and be a star in 2022?
Yeah, so, I mean, exactly. I think it's important to say that the move, as I see, is all cities across the UK. So London is obviously one where we have an extensive network, and so we're most alert to the data. But I think it's a trend nationally as people come back to their work. So I think, yes, central London has, what the difference it has to others is that half of the market, which drives that market, has been unable to visit it. So, you know, that is the international community, which have been, you know, locked up, particularly in the Far East, where, you know, in Malaysia, you haven't been able to leave your area, your region, let alone travel to the UK. And we all know about the restrictions in China and Hong Kong. So there is a large part of the market that hasn't been here to be active. And so really what you're seeing is a return of 50% of the usual buyers, which can only be a boost for it. I don't think that means that it's limited to central London activity. And I think some of the elements of, you know, the pandemic and have changed people's view on things and have given them greater flexibility. So I don't think it's a complete reversion to historic norms. I think the super suburbs that we will talk about, they will also have enduring appeal. People have moved out to these areas with bigger housing and bigger gardens and more greenery and more, and to a certain extent, more local community because of their domestic nature. And they will retain their popularity, I think.
Henry, I'm going to turn to you now. Could you just give us a brief sense of what you think the mood is going to be like in 2022 in prime central London?
Well, I feel kind of the last couple of years have obviously been quite tough. We've been in a bit of a state of stasis. People, as Dom says, haven't been able to travel. We've lost a good proportion of our buyer pool. But as we kind of move forward into kind of the end of the year, into 2022, what we're seeing on the ground is an increase in applicant numbers, both new, so people who we don't have on our books, we've not spoken to before, but also from people who we have on our books that we've kept in touch with over the course of the last 2 years to 18 months. Just this week, I had an email back in from a buyer of mine who first registered in February 2020. Now, she came, saw a few properties, everything went on hold. She's now back, looking, active, asking, querying. And so I think that whilst we've missed some people coming in, we've also had a lot of people here in London already who've just decided to wait, see what happens, see where the dust settles. And then now, as we move forward, new cycles are good. They're coming back to the fore, ready to buy.
So all eyes will be on prime central London and what could unfold there. But I think we need to just talk about the country for a while. Dominic, the market towns, the more far-flung locations, how are they going to be faring in 2022?
So I think some of the steam will come off. I think there's been obviously the major driver, you know, for the sort of extreme, I suppose, nature of the markets in those market towns has eased, which was obviously this sort of complete freedom to work from home and change of life. And so that's not quite there. I think what it did is brought forward a lot of moves as well that were going to happen in the next 5 years, and they happened sort of within 2020 and this year. So that will take some of the steam out. But saying that, you know, the world's not going to return to what it was. I think a lot of people are going to be working some days at home and some days in the office. And that blend obviously makes these living in market towns much more viable than it was perhaps before the pandemic. So I see them retaining their popularity. I think we've had the big push, you know, the big price increases of 10%+ in these country markets. And I think that will ease, certainly as there, you know, there is an affordability ceiling that that will sort of slow price growth. And with interest rates rising, that will sort of affect, again, the sort of the movement of prices upwards. But I think they're going to retain their popularity. And they haven't been popular since 2008. So they've got a long time, I think, to catch up on where they've sort of missed out as a bit unloved, perhaps.
So I get the sense from what you're saying that the pandemic has brought about an almost permanent shift in the way that we perceive property.
I think it's not a complete shift in terms of, there's much debate. I mean, I'm always one who believes that it's somewhere between the two. You know, it's not an extreme shift and it's not a return to normal. And I think it's margins between the two. So a lot of people, you know, you see around the cities and central London where I work, you know, you can see the hustle and bustle and I'm back standing on the tube when I get to work. So there's going to be more people who will be able to work from home during their week. And so that might be a Friday or, you know, one or two days a week. And so commutes are more viable and families can move to the country. So it has changed things. I think in the end of the day, coming to the cities is where one comes to build one's career. And there's a lot that, you know, you do miss out on from full-time working at home in terms of cultures of offices, ability to learn, ability to kind of develop and climb the ladder, really. So London's a young city for that reason. People are coming to it to build their careers. And that is happening. And we can see it actually in the rental market. You know, there is this huge boom in applicants renting properties in London now, and that's outstripping outstripping the country applicants, tenants looking for properties. And that's because, you know, the young professionals are back, really, the sharers, the people setting out in their careers are back in London, the students are back and trying to sort of climb that ladder, as I said.
This tenant demand, is it leading to a shortage of rental stock?
Yeah, completely, actually. I mean, I think people describe as sort of having no properties left to let, really, because there's been such huge demand, which, I mean, is the busiest time of year. But, you know, in the cities, the sort of big drivers for the rental market really are, you know, generally the student, international students, you know, and as I said, the young professionals coming back, and they've come back in waves, really, in sort of big waves. So that's combined with a certain element of, you know, we saw a lot of supply when, as I say, Airbnb wasn't viable during the pandemic. So people put their stuff onto the long-term rental market to let it, landlords did. So that's gone reverted, you know, with Airbnb picking up some of those properties again. And some of the landlords have had a pretty difficult time. So they've had a difficult time where they've been paying, you know, mortgages and rents haven't been coming in. And, you know, there's increased legislation and taxation on them. So there has been a bit of a sell-off. So we're in a bit of a almost perfect storm of sort of a shortening of supply and a big surge in demand in the cities, I think.
Do you think that this big demand for rental homes could cause some landlords to change their mind? We know that a lot of them want to get out of the buy-to-let business.
Yes, well, exactly. I mean, I think the stat was sort of 20% we're considering selling of the buy-to-let market, or private rental sector, say, we're considering selling after the last year or 18 months' experience. I think that rentals, it is important to remember that rental prices do eventually get capped. So, you know, they haven't really gone anywhere. They generally go up with wage inflation or inflation plus one. You know, they are not in the same dynamic as a sales market, which has, you know, new money coming in, maybe the international community or the like, or interest rates going down, making it more affordable. They are very much tied to living. And so rents in London generally track around 50% of the average earning. Rents in the country are generally 30% of the average earning. I think it's around 29% in the country and around 51% in London. And, you know, the reason for that, just to sort of explain it, is because obviously more people fill properties in London. So there's more sharers than there are in the country markets, which allows that percentage to increase. So medium long term, that is what rental prices do. So I think it will be appealing. Landlords generally, you know, they want a safe investment and rents going back to normal levels and growing slightly above inflation is a safe investment. And I think what will appeal to them is the capital growth element always. So that's really the big appeal in the PRS, and you know, you'll start to see in the country there's a strong case for that. You know, prices have moved up 10 to 15%. So if you're a landlord, you've done very well out of that. There are still challenges on the taxation and the change in the additional stamp duty, which make it less appealing from an income basis. So I can't see a rush of landlords investing in city centre rental properties, or buy-to-let properties, I should say, because there are some fundamental things that have changed to take away its appeal. But certainly the case for it, if you have, you know, you can afford to be lowly leveraged, is appealing in the long term.
Now, this is the time of year when analysts and economists all over the place look into their crystal balls and say what's going to be happening to house prices in the years ahead. We've seen some fairly optimistic predictions. Where do you stand on that, Dominic?
So I'm on the optimistic side, and every area is obviously different. And so there obviously are vast sweeping statements one makes on the UK property price direction, because there are, you know, series of micro markets, you know, all over the place with different factors. But being very general about it, I think what we're going to see is central London lead the way. You know, I think you might see 6-7% growth in central London next year as kind of people come back and pick up the slack and push it forward. I think in the country markets, you're going to continue to see that grow at a lower rate. So I think there's a very much a lack of supply, and that will support prices going forward. But I think it won't be the 10%+ we've seen. I think you're more likely to see a sort of 4-5%. And then you're looking at the suburban London, and this is a very difficult one for us because we see so many different markets. You know, there are these super areas, super suburbs that outperform always. But I think you're generally looking at a sort of more steady state, you know, 3-4%. It is affected. It's a domestic market affected by affordability, and, you know, prices are quite high. So I see those as sort of steady state growth. That's a steady state growth market.
Henry, let's turn to you. Give us a sense of the mood in South Kensington, which is your patch of central London.
Well, I think it's been a mood of kind of consolidation. A lot of people have found it a very hard time, kind of for numerous reasons, kind of not just their properties, but working from home, being stuck inside. And as we open up, everyone gets to really enjoy what the area has to offer. I mean, you have so much on the doorstep, and not being able to get out and use it and enjoy it has been very hard. But the mood is one of optimism. I think we're an area that encompasses two great things. One is superb residential property, but also superb things to do, attractions, shops, museums. And we're seeing streets filled with people coming in. So tourists are coming back. Those things are opening up, and kind of the mood is bright.
Now, for those of us who don't know the area, I'm a big fan of South Kensington myself, but what I'd like you to do is take us on a tour. Tell us where South Kensington is, what makes it really special. Is it kind of staid, or does it actually rock?
Well, I would be surprised if there weren't thousands of people who had been to South Kensington before. I mean, one of my earliest memories personally of London is South Kensington. There was a bus that used to take us down from school in Oxford, drop us behind the Natural History Museum, and I'd be picked up, taken around. Mum would try and persuade me to go to the V&A, but I was wanting to go and see the dinosaurs. It was, for me at the time, an incredibly exciting and busy place. And that's exactly kind of what we have. 10 million people a year come and visit the V&A and Natural History Museum. We are so centrally placed. We are on the line that runs you from Heathrow right into centre of town, along the Piccadilly line. So if you're coming in from the airport, you'll find us just south of the park, about 10-15 minutes away from Covent Garden. So we couldn't be better placed, really. In terms of I think staid is a little bit of an unfair statement. Now, kind of, we're certainly not kind of bohemian of Notting Hill, and we're not quite as edgy as Dalston. But what I think kind of makes South Kensington special is that there is this rich history, this rich architectural kind of Diversity, I think, is the wrong word because it's all kind of rather similar. There's Victorian stucco-fronted buildings. They've been around for 150 years and they'll be here long after we're all gone. It's the continuity, but also the kind of the vibrancy of the mix of people coming in. So tourists, residents alike, you can be in the busiest place in town and within 5 minutes you're on a garden square going to your flat and there's nobody else around. It's extraordinary.
These garden squares, is there any one particular market that they appeal to? Do domestic buyers choose to live somewhere very different where international buyers are really aspiring to live?
Well, I think everyone would aspire to live on a garden square. I think there's broad appeal for them. I mean, they're beautiful places to live. Even if you don't use them, waking up in the morning and looking out of your beautiful bay window or kind of triple fronted first floor flat, you see a sea of green. And to be so close to everything in London and yet still have that aspect is what makes it kind of incredibly unique. You can be as busy as you like, but you can still hear the birds in the morning. International buyers, there is a little kind of element of slight suspicion, I think, for some with the intricacies of leasehold property. Obviously, a lot of these are converted houses, so you have a leasehold and some are a little short. So they do like to look for perhaps a modern build with a lift, a porter, somewhere that's safe if they're going to be using it kind of as a pied-à-terre or their children might be using it while they're here at university. There aren't many of those, but you do have some. Point West is a very large modern block. Funnily enough, it's built on the site of the original London Airport Terminal. So you would get there, get on the bus, drive out to a field near Heathrow and fly on your merry way. So it's kind of come full circle in that respect. So international buyers, they do enjoy kind of being in there, having that security and safety.
Now, what is the cost of admission to this urban paradise? Tell us what you'd pay for, say, a 2 or 3 bedroom flat in a gorgeous period building, looking out at that garden square, listening to the birds singing in the morning. What kind of money would you be expecting to find?
I think you'd be struggling to come away with paying less than about $2.5 million. If you want those elements, if you want that period, those period features, and a lot of these buildings are listed as well, so there's only so much you can do. You can modernise them and make them wonderful, but you still retain the cornicing, you retain these beautiful fireplaces, and so you have the perfect balance of modern living and period charm, and that's really what it's all about. So if you want to have these wonderful views and aspects, a quiet place to live, yet just down the road from everything else, around 2.5 would be kind of the start point.
Now, let's say I'm aspiring to own a whole house on one of those squares. What kind of money would I be paying? And is that less or more than it was, say, in 2015?
So I think for a good size 4 to 5 bedroom family house, you're looking anywhere between £5 to 8 million. Those prices are probably relatively similar. I think we've had, kind of, as has been explained, there's been a rush to try and get at this moment in time as much as you can get for your money and to really kind of make that move, maybe skip perhaps from your smaller 2 bedroom flat where the next one might be a 3 bed and ultimately into a larger house. A lot of people have skipped that middle. So they've really kind of gone as high as they can to get this. So for prices on these squares, they tend to remain fairly flat. 2015 obviously being the peak of the market. But even so, the desirable addresses, places like Hereford Square, where all of them are beautiful, grade 2 listed, stucco-fronted houses, it's remained pretty flat since then. They're not bulletproof, but they're certainly pretty tough. And the prices have demonstrated that.
There are an awful lot of people who also want to rent in South Kensington. Can you tell me what groups they are and what the demand is from tenants at the moment?
So demand has been, we've had record levels of demand. Kind of coming out of August in the rental market, things were kind of beginning to bubble and it really was kind of the eye of the storm. In September, October this year for the South Kensington lettings team, twofold increase on 2019, fourfold increase on last year. The highest level of properties let in the last 10 years. It's been extraordinary. This has been driven by a number of factors. Obviously, last year, people at university, Imperial College, just around the corner, superb university, and a lot of Far Eastern students come. They rent, and we were lacking them. They've come back in force this year. So they are probably around 30 to 40% of our market. They want to be within 5 minutes walk of the university. Their parents, proud of their kind of aspiring mathematician or kind of aerospace engineer, are willing to pay for that as well. And hardworking kids just want to be close. So they take up a bracket, maybe kind of two beds up to about £700 per week and £3,000 a month there or thereabouts. We've also seen the return of the young professionals mentioned earlier, kind of those who may have spent their first year in the working life working from home, not coming into the office, having a bit of a strange start to their careers, but they're now kind of pushing in and sharers taking two beds, couples taking one beds. The most interesting one we've seen, though, is the return of the corporate tenant. So this will be the company who's deemed now is the right time to get their US kind of vice president over to the UK to really be part of it. The Zoom call doesn't quite give that. They need people on the ground. So I've been really encouraged to see that coming back. And as has been described, the stock levels are pretty low. So we're busy trying to find all these applicants' places before Christmas.
Talking to you has made me think, yeah, I want to go to the V&A again very soon. My favourite bit of South Kensington now. Finally, turning back to you, Dominic, what surprised you most about the performance of the market in 2021? And what will you be surprised not to see in 2022?
So I think in 2021, the bit that surprised me is obviously the enthusiasm in the market post the stamp duty coming to an end and the increased movement in prices upwards in the sales market further than I would have anticipated. And in the rentals market, really, that's the bit that's sort of come upon us that none of us were expecting, which is this sort of huge surge in demand. We all expected people to come back to London, but not quite in the quantities that have been happening. And as I said, sort of 50% ahead of 2019 in terms of tenant demand for properties in London is a huge number that took everyone by surprise. And going to 2022, I think it would surprise me if Prime Central London didn't push forward and really kind of accelerate in terms of its activity. I think the return of the international student has happened and the international businessman is upon us. So those will drive activity and make for a pretty positive picture, I'd expect, in 2022.
Dominic and Henry, thank you very much for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange. It's been good to chat and share ideas. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast, where we'll be taking a look at London's super suburbs. If you want to know where they are, then just listen in.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.